This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission scheduled for May 4th. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Our next item of business this morning is a report from the Audit Division concerning the New Democratic Network. We have Erica Lee, Marty Favin, and Joseph Stoltz from the Audit Division, and Delaney Painter from the Office of General Counsel on this matter. And Mr. Stoltz, would you and your team like to start first? Is that how we're going to? Okay,
you.
Great. Good morning, Mr. Stoltz.
Good morning. The objection that placed us on the agenda revolves around an event that, or a series of events actually, there's only one of them that's really in question, that this committee sponsored, and how it should be classified, whether it is a fundraising event, in which case the expenses would be allocated based on the relative federal, non-federal contributions received. And in this particular case, all of the money that was raised in connection with this particular event was deposited in a non-federal account. Or whether it is part of the committee's administrative costs and was not a fundraising event, although there were fees and things and membership solicitations made. It was a three-day gathering. And the invitations and so forth that go with it suggest that it was a discussion, workshop kind of thing that dealt with both federal and non-federal issues. We have classified it as an administrative expense of the committee and done the allocations accordingly. The committee argues that it was a fundraising event. In the end, dollars and cents-wise, it makes little difference because we don't wind up with a non-federal overfunding regardless of how it's classified. It's more a question of what needed to be disclosed with respect to the event. If it is strictly a non-federal fundraiser, then the expenses don't have to be disclosed. If it is an administrative event, then disclosure would follow all of the other administrative type costs should have been paid from the federal account and a share reimbursed from the non-federal account.
Thank you, Mr. Stoltz. Does the counsel's office have any thoughts as we consider this? Okay. And we had two objections here, one from the vice chairman and one from myself. I'll just say a couple things perhaps at the outset. I had no problem with recommendations 1 through 3 in the report. As Mr. Stoltz indicated, the issue solely concerns recommendation number 4. And I agree that in terms of the case here, however we come out on this is not going to make a significant difference dollars-wise because, as I understand it, the committee chose to pay for a portion of this event with federal dollars. But I do think it's an important legal principle in terms of how we apply the funds received methodology and how we determine whether a fundraising event is a fundraising event versus another type of event. And I should note, and I apologize for not noting this at the outset, that Commissioner Weintraub is recused from this matter. So she is among the audience for this discussion. But I think it is an important legal question in terms of how we determine what type of events are fundraising events and therefore are governed by the funds received methodology and what types are not and therefore are subject to the administrative split. And I understand that there has been some history of this at the agency over the years, which I was fortunate enough or not fortunate enough to not be a part of, depending upon how you look at that history. But in my view, there's a couple of key things that govern my thoughts in this area. First, as I read the regulations, fundraising events that raise money are governed entirely by the funds received methodology. And as Mr. Stoltz indicated, under that traditional approach, you really look to the type of money that's raised. And if it's all hard money, then the event must be paid for solely with federal dollars. If it's all soft money, then it can be paid pay for entirely with soft money, and if it's a mixture, then you follow the exact proportion in terms of the monies raised. And in the regulations, I really don't see a basis for the agency having discretion to decide that certain fundraising events really aren't fundraising events, either because they don't raise a lot of money or perhaps because they're longer than a couple of hours or even a day. As I see the regulations, if you have an event at which money is banked, that's a fundraising event, and you're in the funds received methodology, and that's what governs how you can pay for the event. And so in that respect, the language on page 11 of the report, that sort of the bottom of the page, and there's the last full paragraph there, says the fact that the funds received from this event were deposited only into the non-federal account is irrelevant when determining whether a disbursement is allocable. And I have a slightly different take on that, because I do think it's relevant in terms of the accounts into which the monies are deposited, and in fact I think it's dispositive. Even if an event lasts more than one day, and regardless of how much money is raised, because if we don't take that position, we're basically saying that we're going to reserve the ability to determine for ourselves whether a fundraising event really is a fundraising event. And I just don't see a basis for doing that in the regulations. The other thing that concerned me was some of the criteria that I mentioned on page 10 of the draft audit report for the argument that there were aspects of this event that were federal in nature. And so the bullet points on the top of page 10 indicating that a speech was given by Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. For me, that really isn't relevant because certainly this event, which predated BCRA, federal candidates could raise soft money for a wide variety of purposes, and that didn't mean it was a federal event. Again, for me anyway, what governs is what type of money is raised at the event. And then the bullet point that talks about the solicitation indicates that it will feature more than 20 members of Congress, discussions on top issues facing policymakers in Washington, and an overview of national politics. I didn't think that was really made a difference one way or the other, because the type of money raised, for me, governs how the event costs need to be paid for. So I mean, I think the reason I objected is because I thought it was important that we have a discussion on this, and I think Mr. Stoltz is absolutely right. This particular event, because the NDN chose to pay for a portion of this event out of hard money, it really doesn't make a lot of difference in their world how we treat this event, but it will make a difference for a lot of other organizations. And from my view is that when it's a fundraising event, no matter how much money is raised, organizations such as this are entitled to rely on the funds received methodology, and that should govern how they pay for these kinds of event costs. They can always choose to pay some federal money for these kinds of costs, but wouldn't be required to use any federal money when only soft money is being raised. So I objected with respect to that issue. And Mr. Vice Chairman, you also lodged an objection.
I did, largely for the same reasons, in addition to the points you've raised, I guess the other sort of part of the analysis is I looked back on our audit many, many years ago with the Michigan Republican Party is the question whether any of these disbursements were in connection with a federal election, and I really didn't see anything here that reflected that they were. The best we can do is that there were, federal officials, members of Congress who attended, although, as the chairman notes, we highlight in the audit report the presence of Senator Clinton, who was then, I believe, 5 years away from her election. And the issues that were discussed were sort of broad. The federal issues that were discussed were broad issues of policy related to the state of the federal of the national economy and the role of terrorism in the future of the nation. And this was an event with state candidates and our state office holders present as well, raising state-specific issues. So I don't see here anything that would lead us to conclude that the funds received method is inappropriate. This certainly was a fundraising event. They were soliciting contributions from people to attend this event, and the funds received were placed in a state political account. So my concerns with this I share the concerns that you've raised.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Discussion on the audit report before us. Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Well, I voted initially to approve this, but I have to say that listening to the arguments from the chairman and the vice chairman, and frankly going back and taking a closer look at the regulation, actually convinced me that I voted incorrectly on this. And I,
It seems to me we put ourselves in a very strange position if we are going to have to judge rather than based on the fundraising principle and where the monies are placed to see whether this is a fundraiser or not. If we're putting ourselves in a position of saying, well, you know, we're going to have to determine whether it's a fundraiser or not depending on how many speakers they had. Well, if they had only two federal speakers and 10 state speakers, well, then it'll count as a fundraiser. But no, if they had more federal... It just puts us in this strange position of trying to judge, well, how much policy speech-making is okay and how much is not, which I think is not a very good idea. I also don't believe that the presence of federal officials automatically brings it within the federal realm, because having many, many years ago been a local county party chairman and having to try to raise money for county commission races, it's much easier to raise money for federal races than it is for local races, because people don't want to give money for that. And the way local parties are able to raise money is they organize events where they bring in their congressmen, because people want to hear from their congressmen, and that's how you get people to events. That's how you actually can raise money for local and state elections. So I've been convinced by these arguments and taking a look back at it, and I actually would like to change my vote from approval to an objection. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. Further discussion on the audit report before us? Commissioner Mason.
Well, I had shared with a couple of my colleagues my experience immediately prior to being on the Federal Election Commission, where I worked for a large nonprofit organization which did fundraising all the time. Fortunately, the fundraising wasn't my job. But we did do multi-day events that were fundraising events, and they were actually set up in a way quite similar to the way these events appear to run, which is to say that people were not charged large fees to go to these events, but if you hadn't already given $10,000 or some large sum, you didn't get invited. And if you had in fact already given your $10,000, well, you got an invitation and you could come to this event, and it might only cost you a few hundred dollars, but it was several days and there were policy discussions and so on like that. And in the context of that organization, which I don't think was at all atypical, it would have been kind of a joke to claim that this was an educational program of the foundation, which in fact was what the group's operations were on, and would have been looked at by the Better Business Bureau and perhaps by the IRS as a misrepresentation of what was going on, because essentially what was going on was what's sometimes called donor maintenance. And it strikes me that the question in a context such as this would be more that not whether this was a fundraiser or not, or fund, you know, donor maintenance, or you know, something clearly related to fundraising, but rather whether the nature of it, where this event was not intended to create a large profit, but in fact was to further their overall relations with the donors, which then would extend to both their federal and non-federal solicitations. You know, could we somehow look at that and reach out and say, well, in fact, this was related to their overall operations? I'm not at all sure that we can in a reliable way, but I think there is a bit of a live question. The other question I want to raise is exactly how far we would take this if we reject this recommendation and replace it with a conclusion that, okay, if you charge the event and the fees related to the event went into your non-federal account, your event costs are non-federal, the event or the series of events that the audit division compared this to were the Michigan Republican Party's Mackinac Island conferences, which I think had that committee before us for three successive audits. And part of the problem there was that under Michigan law, there was a separate category for those type of events, and it was sort of the equivalent of state soft money. And I think the party took the position, well, if the state thinks it's soft money, then of course the feds will too. And the commission decided that we weren't bound by the Michigan statute, and in fact had to enforce our own statute and regulations. Those events, as I recall, were not fundraising events. In other words, I don't recall if there were admissions fees charged or not, but the party anyway didn't say that. But the question it sort of raises is, okay, for parties or other groups that are in a situation like that, that have a big event, would a ruling such as this allow them to recharacterize it by simply changing the structure a little bit and charging people, you know, $100 a head or $10 a head to get in to a multi-day conference, you know, the bulk of which is funded by fees by, you know, attendees. And in the case of the Mackinac Conference, the funding was not significantly by the party rank and file who were there, but rather was by interest groups who wanted to be there with both the federal and the state officials who were participating. And so that could become a significant issue for state parties, and I just want to highlight that, because I don't know how, if we sort of take this per se rule of, okay, you charged a price to get in, you deposited the receipts into your non-federal account, sort of end of discussion, I don't see how we could prevent a state party from taking an event such as the Mackinac event and recharacterizing it in this way.
Vice Chairman Linhart.
Yeah, I wasn't sure we'd gone that far, because my recollection from my review of the records in that case, I wasn't here then, was that there was a lot of indications that the conference was in connection with a federal election. My impression, they certainly had all of the candidates for the presidency there, and held what I believe the FEC characterizes as a beauty contest of all the presidential candidates. They were explicitly discussing federal races, and there was a period of the conference devoted to attacking the incumbent Democratic office holder and supporting the Republican challenger who was present at the conference as well. And so there were my sense was that there were other things going on there that made that clear, that it was in connection with a federal election, that those activities were in connection with a federal election, that were a far cry from what we're seeing before us in this case.
Commissioner Mason.
I vigorously disagree. And the audit division went through exactly that. I mean, what you had here was the person who is and probably was then the leading contender for the Democratic presidential nomination. And Senator Clinton, you know, won't say she's running, and she may not intend to run, but
nobody's running right now.
I understand, but I mean, I'm
all worried on the midterm.
You know, but in terms of this organization's interest, the day she was elected senator, she was a notable possibility to be presidential nominee, and there were these other federal candidates there, and the audit division went through and discussed how this had discussed federal races and so on. And so there may have been, in some of those years, and remember, we went through three cycles with the Michigan Committee, and yes, in the presidential cycle, there was much more of a focus on the presidential candidates in the Michigan caucuses, but not always. And so the difference was at most merely one of degree, and that is you had federal candidates there at the Mackinac Conference. You also had state candidates, and in certain years, the federal component weighed more. But here we clearly had federal candidates here, and we had discussions of federal races. And I'll bet you, if we have transcripts, you had criticism of Republican incumbents. And that's why I'm saying, it looks to me as if we go this route, we're pretty much taking a per se rule. And if we're not, then frankly, I think we would need to go back and do the sort of analysis the auditors did, and say, okay, how many events were there, and what, you know, what was the agenda of the event, and so on. And I agree that's problematic, by the way, but that's why I just wanted to highlight this, because I do think these were actually quite close to the Mackinac conferences in character, in terms of what went on at the events, and the differences really were simply ones of degree, perhaps, but not ones that we could draw the sort of firm distinctions on. Or if we're trying to, that's what I wanted to draw out. Okay, so what would they be? And if in fact we're not drawing a per se rule, and rather we're saying, well, if the person's actually a candidate when they show up, is that the basis? Well, of course, you know, these members of Congress were all candidates at the time they showed up, or what is the basis of how we're going to examine these events, because the auditors need to know and the respondent committees need to know.
A couple things. First, I'm sure the Mackinac Island officials are glad they aren't going through a fourth audit process. As charming as your team is, Mr. Stoltz, I'm sure they think three times is more than enough. I think Commissioner Mason makes a number of good points in terms of the issues here. And for me, my view is that I don't see any basis in the regulations for us to parse through a fundraising event and determine whether or not there was enough money raised or the bar was set high enough that it's truly a fundraising event and determine that some events are truly fundraising events and therefore can be paid for on the funds received methodology, whereas other events really aren't fundraising events, even though some money is being collected and therefore need to be paid on the administrative split. It may make some policy sense to go down that road, and I'm not saying that that would be an irrational analysis. I just don't see a basis for it in the regulations. Reviewing the regulations in the E&J, I don't see any indication that the commission was saying, look, to be a fundraising event, you've got to net a certain amount or you've got to be at a certain dollar level or anything of that nature, nor do I see any indication in the E&J that we were focusing on who was attending these types of fundraising events, who was speaking at them. You know, are they federal candidates, are they non-federal candidates, that kind of thing. Just from my standpoint, and unless we amend the regulations in this area, my view is if money is banked, if money is collected, it's a fundraising event and can be paid for in that manner. Of course, if they're raising hard money at that kind of an event, then they're going to have to pay for that portion of the event with hard money, which I think is the safeguard that's in there in the regulations and works that way. So I guess my response would be, I think Commissioner Mason raises very good points, and we need to provide guidance to our audit team in terms of our position here. My position is that it really is a per se rule. If you're raising money, it's a fundraising event. You follow the funds received methodology. End of story. Vice Chairman Lenhart.
Yeah, I was going to. I guess I just wanted to disagree with Commissioner Mason, because I do find the facts here significantly different. And in determining that, in concluding that this is in connection with the federal election, on page 10, the audit points to several different factors. One was that in the prior year allocated the costs based upon the funds received. In the prior years, they had in fact deposited some funds in their federal account, and so we conclude that that past practice leads us to believe that this was in connection with a federal election. The second was that 20 members of Congress arrived, and there were discussions of issues facing policymakers in Washington, which included challenges to the economy, trends in the global media, terrorism, and the national political landscape. The fourth factor we consider is that the home state senator in this the location of this event, Senator Clinton, gave a speech. At this point, this was in April of 2002, which I find hard to believe was truly in preparation for a presidential race in 2008. And finally, there were panels that discussed the candidates that this organization supported, although that's not clearly presented on the agenda. Looking at those factors as the basis for our conclusion that these expenditures were made in connection with the federal election and therefore administrative costs, although they were all event specific, does not strike me as a supportable conclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Commissioner Mason.
But I'm just trying to get an understanding. I mean, one of the issues at Mackinac was that we were able to rely on press accounts of exactly what was said in the speeches, which I know in other contexts the vice chairman has sometimes worried a bit about, in essence, that we do become the speech police. And if it's on that sort of basis, we have a fairly sketchy description, and in fact, I suspect most of the events were closed to the press. And my suggestion is if the distinction between this and Mackinac, I mean, the Mackinac events could have been described in ways similar to this absent the news stories that were associated with them. Now, of course, the party seemed to want the news coverage, so maybe they pay a penalty for that. But if if the question is the connection with federal races, I don't know how, based on what the vice chairman has seen, has said, we would avoid a more searching inquiry into what was said. Because I'm fairly confident that if you sat through those sessions, there would have been a fair amount of pointed electoral discussion. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But that's the area. I just want to point out that that's the area the vice chairman is sending us into, is that we would have to say, you know, not only look at the panels and who was on the panels, but what was said. In other words, it seems to be the distinction between NDN as its representatives. Well, the panels were about issues, and even though there were federal candidates there, it was an issue discussion, and so that makes it okay to be a fundraiser. But at Mackinac, we know they actually talked about elections, and so that changes it. And that's my question, is what's our standard, and then how are we going to police that standard, and are we going to set up a standard that's going to require us to have a transcript of the event before we can make a distinction between whether it was a fundraising event an overhead administrative cost. And I don't think that's a tenable way to make that distinction, and that's why I'm raising the issue.
I think we'll have no choice but to go to Mackinac Island next summer and assess that event for ourselves. I understand it's lovely there in July. Two quick points. I think Commissioner Mason outlined sort of the pros and cons of different approaches. Under the approach I'm advocating, there would be no searching inquiry because you would focus solely on the types of funds raised and whatever that is. If it's all hard, then the event has to be paid for out of hard money. If it's all soft, then it can be paid for out of soft, and it wouldn't matter in terms of who's attending and how the panels are structured and that kind of thing. Further discussion on the issues before us today.
I'd be interested to hear General Counsel's comment on some of the debate that's taken on. I'm concerned about Commissioner Mason's issues, and I'd like to just get some thought on where you stand on the debate.
Our able counsel's office, Mr. Norton.
Comments on the debate? So you just say who's won the debate?
Mr. Norton.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Well, I would say thank you, Commissioner Walker, but I'm really not feeling grateful. I don't really actually have a whole lot to add. I think that I do agree with Commissioner Toner that I think the regulation settles the matter. The only other point I would make, and while it doesn't directly apply here, I think it's worth noting, is the regulation in 100.24 where the Commission was addressing federal election activity and specifically crafted an exception in... I'm going to have trouble citing the provision, but it's towards the very end of the regulation where it identifies exceptions, and one of them is the commission was specifically addressing amounts expended or disbursed by a state, district, or local committee of a political party, and one of the exceptions for federal election activity is the cost of a state, district, or local political convention, meeting, or conference. I think it's worth noting, although it's not the controlling regulation. I think the controlling regulation takes you to the place where the commission appears to be.
Thank you, Mr. Norton.
It wasn't that bad.
Further discussion on the audit report before us. And Commissioner Walker.
I'm prepared to call it a per se rule forever, but in this particular case, I'm comfortable with withdrawing my objection and supporting your position on this. Originally, I approved it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Well, do we have a motion? Do we want to offer a motion on handling this? And since I'm barred from offering one, then I open the floor to my colleagues. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Well, I'm profoundly tempted to continue going around and around with Commissioner Mason. I think I will draw this all to a close because I don't think he's fairly characterized at all what I'm saying. But we'll leave that for another day. I would like to make a motion to adopt the audit recommendations as to finding 1, 2, and 3 and to strike finding number 4 in the audit of the New Democratic Network, which is, I believe, agenda document 06-35.
The The Vice Chairman has moved to adopt findings numbers 1 through 3 in agenda document number 06-35 concerning the audit report of the New Democratic Network and to strike finding number 4. Discussion on the Vice Chairman's motion. Mr. Stoltz.
Traditionally, what the Commission has done in these sorts of situations is rather than strike a finding, what we would do is explain the Commission's conclusions with respect to the finding, and the finding would remain in the report. Among other things, it then tells the reader how the Commission concluded, as opposed to having it just sort of disappear from the report.
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Yeah, and we have done that only recently. I'm not inclined to do that in this circumstance. I mean, in part because I think going back and that there is consensus that we don't agree with this analysis. It's not clear to me that easily or quickly we can come to complete agreement on how to phrase what our analysis is. And similarly, there's a great deal in this report that ends up, supporting a conclusion that we don't, after we voted, we're not going to agree with. And so I guess my sense in this particular case is that it would be clearer and easier and less confusing and quicker simply to delete this particular finding.
Mr. Costa.
That would certainly establish a new precedent for the agency, and obviously that's up to the Commission to make that determination. The Audit Division has always proceeded on the basis that we make findings in our audit reports to the Commission. The Commission deliberates over those findings and then makes decisions based on that. And where a finding is not adopted by the Commission, we so state that, to the point where we will add whatever the Commission wishes to the substance of the report in order not to misinform the public. That's our opinion on it. That is the standard that we follow, the reporting, the standard that is required of an auditor. So in our view, we would strongly support a Commission determination to add language to this body of this report that explains in detail, as much detail as you wish, what the decision was the Commission made when it made it.
Thank you, Mr. Costa. I'm sorry, is anybody seeking recognition there? No. Okay, great. A couple points. I have to say I'm inclined to support the Vice Chairman's approach. And to be honest with you, I prefer to have this discussion not in a public meeting, but we are told legally that we must have this kind of discussion in a public meeting, and it's not ideal. But the reason I'm inclined to support the Vice Chairman's motion is that whatever the view of the agency is in terms of audit reports is the agency acting as a whole. And to have a situation where you have proposed findings put out in a public document that either can be adopted or rejected or modified suggests that there's an independent operation here apart from the commissioners and the agency, and I have a problem with that. I think that we collectively do our work and review the regulations and review for all the work product here in terms of the various divisions. And I have difficulty with a situation where you have a proposal and then if commissioners have a different take on it, their option is to basically have that noted in the record. I don't think that's an unreasonable way of proceeding. I understand we have proceeded that way a long time, but I have to say I don't think it's as preferable as coming to a collective decision on how we view the regulations and how we view the legal issues, and then whatever that decision is, have that be reflected in the document. It is how we handle things in other areas, for example, in advisory opinions and obviously in regulations. And I understand every area is different, but I do think that's more seamless. But I have to say I would have preferred to have this kind of discussion in private, and I recognize that these are strongly held views in terms of these issues, but I have to say that is my view. And I think it would be vastly preferable to proceed in the manner in which the Vice Chairman has indicated. Further discussion on the motion. Commissioner Mason.
Well, I'm of two views again. First, let me make an observation about the privacy. It doesn't bother me to discuss the particulars of this in public or the policy. In fact, I think there's great value to it because one of the things that concerns me is that we be clear about the policies we're adopting, the basis for those policies, and the implications for other committees. And so I think one of the most I think we are all in agreement that this issue is of virtually no importance whatsoever as applies to the New Democrat Network, And so if
I should say that the discomfort I had in terms of talking about this in public was not the substance of the issue. It's how we're handling and what we're going to do with these documents.
That doesn't bother me either. But
well, that's fair enough.
The chairman,
it does, because I think these things are tough issues to work through institutionally.
But if we dispose of this report on an issue that's of little consequence here, I am very concerned about the implications of that and you know where we you know what it implies elsewhere and in terms of how we operate. I do not want to come out with an outcome that could have a significant effect on the way state party committees and other committees that allocate funds are permitted to allocate, but be unclear about what the basis of it was or the implications. And so simply striking the report and making it go away striking the finding and making it go away with no explanation, I think is a very bad outcome, because exactly the issues I've raised where commissioners may differ, then the next time the auditors go into the field, what standard do they use? And for the state party committees or non-authorized committees such as NDN who are holding events, what standard do they use? We've got a duty to inform them. In terms of the audit, findings and rejections, I know the auditors feel very strongly about that. I understand. I'm a little less bothered because, as I understand it, their source of that is the standards for government auditors, which essentially say that auditors have an obligation to put forth findings that they view as material. But one of the things that same standard says is that auditors should be cautious about the fact that they're not the ultimate judges or policymakers in those. And so it strikes me that the distinction between this commission's audits and audits by, say, an inspector general or by an independent auditing agency is the auditing function and the policy function is merged, and it's right here. And so I don't think and because of that, and because the commission is in a position to make a policy determination, it strikes me that if the commission makes a policy determination which obviates the need for a finding, we ought to explain that. But it doesn't strike me that simply taking out the finding and discussing the policy is some kind of a violation of the auditing standards. Because we have that policy answer right here with us, but I think we do have an obligation to state the policy basis, and I would not support a motion that would leave us taking this finding out and not explaining why.
I think Commissioner Mason makes a number of good points in terms of the audit function versus the policy or the legal interpretation function. I actually was planning to offer a statement for the record that indicate my view on this issue, similar to when we do not adopt a general counsel's report in the enforcement side, a statement for the record that lay out the basis for my view in terms of this area of the law, and then however many people wanted to join me would be obviously their decision. And I agree with the Commissioner Mason that it's important for us internally and externally to clearly indicate our view of the law and how we ought to approach these issues and how we want our audit team to approach these issues. I agree completely with that. My biggest concern about the way we've done this historically is that you have sort of two voices in the report, one from the audit team, and then if it's those recommendations are not adopted, a second voice in terms of commissioners. And I'm just uncomfortable with that because there's a dissonance when you have that kind of a process. I'd prefer to speak with one voice when we are able to reach consensus on these kinds of issues. But I agree with Commissioner Mason wholeheartedly that we have an obligation to state clearly what our position is, and I actually was planning to offer a statement for the record on this particular issue and see how many people wanted to join on that, and sort of similar to how we do statements of reasons in the enforcement side, which I would hope would serve that kind of function. Further discussion. Commissioner Wolf.
I'm wondering if it seems to me we're talking about a matter of methodology and departing from a procedure that we've had over the period of time and not amending the audit report, but rather not agreeing with it and stating our reasons why we don't agree and going forward with it that way. And that's really not an issue for which recusal makes a difference here. It's how we do business ourselves. And I was wondering if we might invite Commissioner Weintraub to participate and vote on the methodology issue.
You mean in terms of the institutional issue of how
the institutional issue of how we deal with that?
Mr. General Counsel.
I don't mean to cut you off.
Sure,
General, if you want
to. Please. By all means.
Well, I think Commissioner Walther raises a good point. I think that we are talking about is a the commission could certainly do that, do what it wants to do on a case-by-case basis, but I think we're talking about a departure from longstanding policy. I see no reason, you know, why the full commission couldn't participate in that. And frankly, you know, while if there's consensus and you want to make a decision about this today, that's certainly fine. I don't see any reason why this particular question couldn't be reserved for later with an opportunity to reflect a little more on it. And it does very much concern internal policies and could, without question, be discussed in executive session. And so, I mean, again, it's the commission's prerogative to discuss it in open session. And, of course, if there's consensus, there's no bar to deciding it today. But I think, in particular, Commissioner Walther's point about Commissioner Weintraub is a good one.
I only say that because going forward, it seems to me that this is of concern to a lot the commissioners and staff as well, and I'm not inclined to depart from the longstanding tradition of that more thought and debate today. And I'd be interested to hear what Commissioner Weintraub has to say and as part of the overall debate on methodology.
Okay, why don't we do this? When in doubt, take a five-minute break. Let's think through during the break about how we want to approach this matter, and also you know, if we want to think institutionally in a broader sense, do we want to do that in an executive session? Let's take a five-minute break and we'll reconvene. Okay. Thank you, Madam Secretary. Okay, back on the record. I think what we're going to do is we'll hold over this audit report of the New Democratic Network, and we will do some more thinking internally in terms of the institutional questions of how to handle findings of the audit reports that may or may not be adopted by the commission. And then we'll, once we've made that decision, we'll be able to implement it in this audit report as well as others. So I think we've gotten the issues out on the table, and we'll plan to do that and then take this matter back up in the coming weeks. If there's no objection, we'll plan to proceed in that manner.